This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I'm interviewing Summer Brenner, the author of a novel called I-5, a novel of crime, transport, and sex. Hi, Summer. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Well, thanks for talking to me today. This is a pretty remarkable novel. I think, you know, it may be categorized as a sort of noir piece, and the subtitle, of course, tells a lot, but for people who can't see the book, it has this really kind of almost graphic novel cover. And the I-5 is I-5, as in the highway I-5, which is the main north-south artery of California. Can you maybe talk a little bit about the story of the book so people have an understanding, a little background on what this book is about?
Yeah, well, the story really centers around a woman being transported from Southern California to Oakland, and she's been trafficked into the United States as a sex slave, and she's being moved. I mean, typically, women under these circumstances are moved frequently. It's a way for them to avoid having personal connections to people who might visit them, their clients. And
also disorients them, probably.
And just actually makes them more dependent on the network of whomever is controlling their lives.
And you have this main character that the book is told through, named Anya.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's striking, you know, it obviously is a very painful subject, and for anybody who's, you know, kind of disturbed by the it's not that you have a lot of graphic sex, which you don't, but there's the suffering in this story is pretty intense.
Yeah, one of my big challenges, David, was how to tell the story without it in any way being titillated. Titillating. It's really not a story of sex trafficking. Isn't really a story about sex. It's a story about exploitation and profit other human beings' bodies.
Well, true. I mean, clearly the motivator for your main character, who is the organizer of this, and I think what you did in this novel is really striking, that the characters are real. The people, they're people. They're not figures. They're not, you know, you didn't cast them as good and evil in a kind of straightforward way. They're much more complicated, so that the main organizer, who would have the role of being the evil genius, is really, you know, he's very human at the same time. And I'm not necessarily saying that you're trying to cast him as a sympathetic character, but it's realistic in that, you know, he's just a guy, and he's out for money.
Yeah, well, I think people are very... I think all of us are deceived by our ideas about ourselves. And so each one of the characters in this book has a perception of themselves that's very different than, as a reader, how you perceive them, including Anya. Anya, to me, is a real character of survival. And she also recognizes that this is an opportunity if she can survive smartly, and she isn't ever quite sure what's smart. And she is kind of contrasted with a couple of other female characters who've also been trafficked, who relate to the experience very differently than hers. So the term that's used is that, you know, Anya has a kind of agency. She has a kind of self-possession. She has a kind of awareness, and she's determined to try to make her way through this labyrinth of horror and try to find herself on the other side.
Well, I have tons of questions about that. I
mean, okay.
One is, you know, as a in the story, or in the way you've written this book. And of course, I don't want to give away a lot of the story. It's a tremendous, like, fast-paced novel with, you know, event after event after event. You know, some pretty painful and horrible.
But quickly over with.
Oh yes, in fact, no. This it's a very short book, and you pack an amazing amount of action into it. But one of my main questions is, she is cast as all the girls conceivably could be, as part of this kind of complicated plan run by the Russian guy who set it up. But he is the way you got it is that the girls are indebted to their to the people who have enslaved them, and they work their debt off through performing sex for money. And what is clearly shown is that they have a goal, and that is to become free by working off their debt.
Mm-hmm. Well, debt bondage is kind of the universal currency of human trafficking as it exists in the world today. That's not the only way that humans are enslaved, but it's estimated that maybe 30 million people in the world are in some kind of form of slavery. This is typical that a girl has been lured from one place to another. She's typically been told she's going to be working as a waitress or maybe a dancer or maybe a model. There's a lot of ways that you can make this a very attractive proposition to someone who has no economic prospects, perhaps at all. And so then when she comes to wherever her destination is, she's told, well, okay, you're not going to be doing that, but by the way, you owe me for your air ticket. And then maybe you owe me for the visa. And I kind of elaborate on that and, you know, where every haircut, any kind of makeup, all the clothes that have been bought for her, and of course she's being forced to do work against her will, all of that goes onto a tab. And then her performances are, but you know it's of course it's kind of a fiction. It is truly a fiction, economic fiction, because the girls really are used until they become either kind of a nuisance, a diseased, pregnant. There are all kinds of ways that really, in reality, that they're you know, abandoned and oftentimes with no place to go because they're from cultures that won't accept them back. Maybe they were even married with families at home. I mean, they're all, the variation of the nightmare is pretty extensive, and you know the debt bondage in terms of dollar and cents, I play on that, but it isn't really accurate to the dollar and cents. That's just being used. That's just the way that that he is able to keep her in line, because that's a kind of morality she has. She believes that, oh, she does owe something. Just the way when you get a traffic ticket, you think, or, you know, a parking ticket, you think, oh, I did something wrong. I didn't put enough quarters in my meter, and now, you know, I'm going to have to pay $40. And you most likely do pay your traffic, your parking ticket. And so she has, you know, that she has this kind of sense of her obligation too.
Well, and so obviously, the way you're talking about it, you know quite a bit about what goes on in terms of sexual slavery in the United States. Is this something you've been? Is this an extension of activism that you've done in behalf of this work?
Well, first of all, it's really international. It's so prevalent in the industrialized countries that that you have women, men, and children performing all kinds of tasks against their will, but also in places like in Cambodia, Thailand, places where there's a lot of sex tourism, you have Westerners traveling to those countries, or you know, even wealthy businessmen in within those countries taking advantage of the poverty that exists, and this being sort of the last resort of how people can, young people particularly, can help even feed their family, you know, help their younger siblings not die of starvation. It's a very extreme situation. I know I wouldn't consider myself exactly an expert on the subject, but I know something about it, and I did read Kevin Bale's book, Disposable People. He has another book out called The Slave Next Door. I read some of the investigative reporting that's gone on. I read some State Department white papers about the subject. Amnesty International discusses it. There's also in the abolitionist movement itself, there's a lot of testimonials that are available by women who've been trafficked. So, you know, you pick up some of those details, operational details, as you read along. But I think the thing that, in a way, most informed me was how to get in touch with a certain emotional research, and also having been myself a kind of wage slave. I had to earn a living. I had to support my children. I had to take whatever job was offered. I understand something about a kind of a lack of choice at certain crossroads in one's life. I didn't have to completely degrade myself. But there are certain kinds of meaningless work that is degrading. I mean, it's pushing paper around a desk, but it's meaningless. Sure. So there were certain kinds of internal, if you will, emotional research that I did. And then certain instances that have happened in my own life where I felt very vulnerable to someone else's observation of me or assessment of me. I mean, women are, you know, we're being told daily by fashion companies and makeup companies that, you know, we have to present ourselves in a certain way in order to be looked at, observed, and assessed. I mean, this is all very kind of complicated in the culture. The first time this happened to me, I recall this memory of being a very young girl, of 4 years old, no older than 4 years old, and my mother being concerned about my posturing, she took me to see this osteopath, and I was naked practically. I had on a little pair of underpants, and my mother was in the room, and the man, you know, he examined and tapped my neck and back, and then he lifted my arm, and he said to my mother, "It's perfect, isn't it?" And I remember a feeling that to this day makes me shudder. And so there were certain kinds of things that came up in writing the book and that helped me get into Anya's complexity of feelings about choices that she's made. And one more detail of how these operations function is that girls get out of line and they're told that because of the debt that they owe, they will go back to their family in whatever the country of origin is. They will threaten their family. They tell them they will kill their family if they don't do what they're told. So,
well, I think you've done a remarkable job of transforming the story into an emotionally accurate representation of what what can happen. And as you said, it's much more universal than it would first appear. It's not just something that happens to somebody we don't. I mean, of course, there are people we don't know who this is happening to every day. But as you said, there is a certain universality to this notion of enslavement.
Oh yes, and the United States government will tell you that the figure varies, but I think it's something like 15,000 to 25,000 people are trafficked into the U.S. every year. But millions and millions worldwide, and human trafficking, and not exclusively sex trafficking are we talking about here, but human trafficking vies with drugs and weapons as the one of the three largest underground economies.
Well, and it probably because it's sort of, the general approach to sex crimes is not to deal with them as because they're not as violent. You know, there isn't as much violence that results of, or as obvious violence that, maybe as I'm saying that I'm thinking wrong, but, they are looked at as more acceptable in some way, because the people who are the victims are not given enough social value, or not given appropriate social value. The notion of sex slavery is probably not given as much law enforcement attention as maybe, violent crime, murders, and armed robberies and things like that.
Mm-hmm. There were quite a new protocols in place. There are some special visas in the U.S. now that are being offered to women who have been trafficked. But it's akin to domestic violence in the sense that brutalization of women is something that, well, for one thing, in these particular cases, the women are really anonymous. They are living in some kind of out of time and out of place. They have no papers. They often have no language skills. They have no money. Nobody knows who they are or where they are. And I create this device in the book where they the network forces the girls to write letters to their families because they don't want any kind of official investigation or any kinds of suspicions aroused. That's part of the way that I constructed the fiction.
Right. Well, I think you did a remarkable job with
the book. Thank you.
I love the writing. I love the story. I love the character of Anya, who is just incredibly powerful. And I admire this book. So, thanks so much for talking to me about it. We've been talking to Summer Brenner, author of I-5, a novel of crime, transport, and sex, published by PM Press, and I definitely recommend people go find it because it's a really good book.
Thank you, David, so much.
Thanks, Summer. This has been David Wilk for Writer's Cast. Thank you very much.